It's May Day, and a group of farmers are in D.C. today to stop fracking in their town. And what about corporate accountability? The Occupy movement continues to ask that question as they plot a resurgence. Welcome to the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, what we're calling On the Ground. I'm Esther Varam, happy to be back on Community Comment with the WPFW family. Thursdays will be dedicated to social justice activism with a special emphasis on sustainable living, the environment, economics, labor, and of course the left edge of culture and media. With all that said, we do plan on packing a lot into our hour, including your calls in the second half of the show. But first, some headlines you might not hear elsewhere. As Congress returned from recess, about 1,500 people descended on the Capitol to protest the widening gap between rich and poor. Under the banner Battle for the Capitol, the marchers condemned corporate tax cuts and called for a rise in the minimum wage. A new study confirms most of the job growth since the economic recession has been in low-wage jobs. The National Employment Law Project reports that there are nearly 2 million fewer jobs in mid and higher wage industries and nearly 2 million more jobs in lower wage industries than before the recession. The U.S. Senate has stripped a provision from a key intelligence bill that would have required President Obama to publicly disclose the number of people killed by drone strikes. The move reportedly came at the behest of the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, who suggested it could undermine operations. The provision would have required Obama to report the number of civilians and combatants killed or injured in drone strikes. But panel chair Senator Dianne Feinstein agreed to drop it. Clapper says the Obama administration is exploring its own ways to disclose data on the strikes. Thousands of people rallied in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, calling on President Obama to reject the Keystone XL pipeline. The protest was organized by the Cowboy Indian Alliance, a group of ranchers, farmers, and tribal communities from along the pipeline route who have set up the Reject and Protect encampment near the White House. The rally came a week after the Obama administration announced that it had again delayed a decision on approval or rejection of the pipeline that would carry tar sands oil from Alberta to the Gulf Coast. And what is being hailed as a major victory for public health, the U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday affirmed the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate cross-state air emissions from polluting factories and power plants. In a 6-2 decision, the court upheld the cross-state air pollution rule, commonly known as the transport rule, which required 28 eastern states to reduce power plant emissions of sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxides, which often form smog and worsen air quality across state lines. And finally, new evidence shows that camels are likely the source of the ongoing outbreak of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, a viral respiratory illness that has led to the deaths of more than 100 people, according to a new study published in the journal InBio and the latest Bloomberg News report. Researchers at the Center for Infection and Immunity at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health, King Saud University, and EcoHealth Alliance extracted a live infectious sample of MERS virus from two camels in Saudi Arabia. They found that this sample matched the virus found in humans on a genetic level. Related, the number of those killed by the Ebola virus in Guinea is now at least 136. Nearly 210 cases have been confirmed. In all, across Liberia and Guinea, 142 people have been killed and 242 infected in an outbreak that began months ago in the forested villages of southeast Guinea and spread to the capital city. Those are the headlines. We'll be right back.
Breaking rocks out here on the chain gang. Breaking rocks and serving my time. Breaking rocks out here on the chain gang. Cause they done convicted me a crime. Hold it steady right there while I hit it. Well,
oh, welcome back to Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avarum. Well, today is May 1st, or May Day, celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day. Many Asian and European stock markets are closed in observance. May Day rallies are also planned across the USA, including a large one in Washington, D.C., that will include a march from Union Station to the Capitol Building and then on to the White House. Also here in D.C., as well as in New York City and Charlotte, North Carolina, activists are on the ground fighting on many fronts for corporate accountability, for jobs, and for the environment. Well, first here in D.C., a hearing just completed minutes ago in the D.C. Circuit of the U.S. Court of Appeals. At the hearing, a coalition of activists were supporting a small community of New York farmers in a challenge to the Millennium Pipeline Company, which has a fracking operation in their town in Minisink, New York, and also against the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Advocates for the farmers say that the case will set national legal precedent in regard to communities' rights to defend themselves from unwanted infrastructure forced on them by the oil and gas industry. If successful, Minisink, New York will be the first community to have a hands-on, to have a brand new gas compressor station shut down and removed from the location. In July of 2012, members of the community set a rare legal precedent with a 3-2 split vote at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to approve the Minisink compressor station, with two commissioners dissenting, both the chairman at that time as well as another commissioner. The ramifications of the case will be critical to the larger network of gas infrastructure battles in the Northeast. Developments are being closely monitored by both industry and frontline community advocacy groups. The conflict and ensuing case began in June of 2011 with two large gas-fired power plants and several new miles of lateral pipeline hinged on the viability of the Minisink compression station. Minisink's success in the upcoming proceedings would be a critical blow to the industry's plans for the state of New York and, I guess, for the whole region, really. Okay. Joining me at the courthouse is Asha Kanalos, an organic farmer from Minisink, New York. Good morning, Asha.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, and thanks for being with us. And joining me in the studio is Kim Frochek, a coordinator with the Sane Energy Project, and also Claire Donahue, a founding member of the same group. Thank you for hustling over here so quickly after the hearing. Thank you for being with me. So let me start with you, Claire and Kim, and Ash, you can hop in also. But what happened at the hearing today?
Asha is probably the best qualified one to answer this, so I'm going to let Asha actually answer it.
Yes, Asha, what happened today?
Sure. So today was the culmination of our it's been nearly 3 years now that we've been battling this compressor station. And today, our lawyer, of course, defended our argument. But on the other side, the attorneys were compelled to split the remaining time, both for FERC, representing FERC, as well as representing Millennium. And it was a very dramatic procedure, although it was very short, only about 45 minutes. But we're feeling fairly good about it because the judges really, really grilled the attorneys for FERC and Millennium and caught them in a number of contradictory statements, hypocritical kinds of presentations of facts. So we'll be waiting at least 4 weeks, if not a few months, for our answer. It was very dramatic.
Well, now, this case began in 2011. Can you tell us kind of what happened You know, how does this pipeline company get to set up right in the middle of a fertile farming area?
Yes. Well, that's one of the largest aspects of our case. This is the, from what we're able to tell nationally, this is the most that the industry has pushed the envelope, so to speak. This is, we can't find a compressor station that is located next to this many people. We have 200 families within half a mile of the compressor station. And we also can't find evidence of a compressor station that is entering into prime agricultural soils. We have some of the highest grade soils in Minisink, it's known as the Black Dirt Region. So the company came in and they sent out some notices. At least half of the residents in our town did not receive notices. And we were given about a month to respond to this compressor station coming into our town. And really very few of us even knew what a compressor station was or how dangerous they are. They release an incredible amount of emissions that are all toxic, carcinogens and neurotoxins. And they explode. They're known for exploding across the country. We have homes as close as 600 feet away with children, you know, four children living directly across the street.
Okay, I want to just jump in for a second. I want you to tell me about that family, because I know that they were going to perhaps make the trip today, but tell me about that. There's a family directly across the street from this station. Okay. How were there any permits required? Were there any hearings? How did they manage to just build this there? How did this come to be?
Yeah. You would think that local zoning would come into play, but because it's a federal project, all local zoning is completely overridden by the FERC process. So it doesn't matter if you have zoning against industry. It doesn't matter if you have residential or agricultural zoning. Because the federal process permits that to be trumped. And this is how the industry manages to really stack the cards against the average person. They've been planning this for at least 10 years. We had a month to find out even what it was and fight it. Thankfully, we were able to get a lot of information. We have a lot of very gifted, very smart people in our community who have been working tirelessly on this for 3 years. So fortunately, we were able to extend the FERC process for many, many months more, in fact, over a year, which is unusual. But most communities do not have those advantages. So these compressor stations, by way of example, they just put one up, the same pipeline company, Millennium Pipeline, has just created another compressor station not very far away from us in Hancock. And because there was no opposition there, or virtually none, they were able to do it in a matter of months.
Wow. So I'm thinking back, and you say 10 years, and I know one of the controversies around fracking is that they were able to kind of bypass the rules of the Clean Water Act, and and there was a lot of discussion, especially in the Gasland movie, about Halliburton's involvement and Dick Cheney's involvement in kind of bypassing those rules originally. I'm just kind of looking at the timeline here, but in terms of the impact in your community, tell us a little bit about the Black Dirt Region of New York. A lot of people in our region may not know, but you know, it's a very rich, fertile farming area. Somebody told me last night that's where we get a lot of our red onions and potatoes just really good bumper crops there. Tell me a little bit about the impact of this on farming. I know that you're an organic farmer, and I think that I understand that you haven't been able to farm.
Yes, I haven't, for a number of reasons. I live less than a quarter of a mile away, and working outside, after the compressor began running, at first there were a number of really frightening, what they call blowdown events, which is a terrifically loud, you can hear it from over a mile away, event where they release everything that is in the pipeline from one point to another. In our case, it was from Milford, Pennsylvania, to Randallsville, New Jersey. They emptied out the entire pipeline into our community.
Is that in the air, in the water, when you say?
Directly into the air. And we are a sole aquifer community. Everyone has well, we're, you know, well fed. Our water is just like a foot below the earth. So everything that's going into the air, as we all know, it will fall into our water and into our soil. And that means a tremendous risk to our food and to our water supply. Minisink happens to be in an area of the Wallkill River, which in fact flows north to contribute to New York's drinking water supply. We're also the closest agricultural region to the city. So, you know, this is where most of the food that are in farmers markets, for instance, this is where most of that food issues from. This is an incredibly important region. But the industry doesn't care. It doesn't matter to them. And so that threatens all of our food, all of our water. But it also means that family farms are now facing incredibly difficult decisions and choices. You know, when I was working outside last year and these blowdowns began, you can feel, it affects you immediately. At one point I was so dizzy, I stood up while working and I stood up and intended to walk through a door and I walked into a wall. And unfortunately I'm just one person of many, many people in our community who are complaining of dizziness, sore throats, nosebleeds, full body rashes, headaches, terrible headaches, and nausea. And they're fairly common symptoms. And what really concerns us is that these are the same symptoms that people are having right up next to where drilling is occurring, where the actual fracking is occurring. So we're actually, you know, having the same identical symptoms, even though we're not, you know, directly next to a fracking well.
You know, one of the reasons why we're doing this segment today on May Day, International Workers Day, is because of the labor aspect of it. You know, farmers are laborers. They're kind of self-employed, you know, and this is the way they make a living. So how have farmers been impacted in terms of their ability to make a living? Do you know?
Well, for me, directly, we haven't made a living. And this... this fight has been so consuming that this is pretty much all I've been, you know, doing lately. And the other farmer that I work with the most, she manages a farm that her family started in the 1700s. It's one of the oldest farms in the state, and in fact in the country. So their farm is an organic grass-fed beef farm, a really large one, and of course, you know, they're wondering if it's going to be viable anymore, if we can't get this compressor shut down, because the risks to the animals are, you know, way too great for.
Sure. The cows are eating the grass.
They're drinking the water.
Right.
And you know, and then the people that are working on the farm are subjected to the same contaminants.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very stressful.
Yeah. So, Claire and Kim, what is going to happen now? And I think you're expecting a decision in the next 6 weeks. What would you like to see happen now? What's possible?
I think what I would like to see happen is that the Minisink compressor station gets shut down, and that we create a stoppage for the oil and gas industry to be able to proceed to build out their dangerous and deadly infrastructure in our population.
And do you have any sense from talking to the, or just from being at the hearing today, you know, were you encouraged there? You know, did you get any signs that the judges might actually kind of side with the people?
They definitely grilled the presenting lawyers on both sides, but they did press the representative of FERC and Millennium very hard. They did seem to challenge them, so there was some positive, you know, movement there. This case is just one case. The real problem is this agency, FERC, a federal agency they approve 99% of all these projects. And one of the issues that is raised by this case is there a prejudice to approve these kind of, you know, projects, since they approve them so very often? The representative for FERC, the lawyer for FERC, said that it's not prejudice. It's because the companies that present these cases to them know what they're doing. So they're not prejudiced. They just know that they know what they're doing. It to a layperson, it was the most outrageous statement you could hear.
You know, and also kind of continuing to tie into May 1st and International Workers' Day, the kind of connections to the Washington, D.C., Maryland area, we know that there's a big plant being planned for Cove Point, Maryland.
Right.
And this would be actually an export area, so that all these different pipelines from up and down the East Coast will feed there and then actually export the gas. So
right.
We're kind of paying the price with our soil and our air for someone else to get natural gas. So,
right.
And you'll be back here, I guess, in a few weeks, you said, for another demonstration about Cove Point.
A huge demonstration against Cove Point and all of this related infrastructure up and down the East Coast in July, the second weekend of July. So, I mean, because everyone on the East Coast is affected by this build-out, not just this one particular pipeline company, but every pipeline company is racing to develop as many pipelines as possible. You know, in Congress, they're saying, we've got to hurry up and export gas because we've got to beat Russia. I mean, which is insane, because these LNG terminals take years to build, even once they're approved. So it's all on this false premise of export. And what that's going to do is make it worse and worse for communities where fracking is done. It's going to make it more expensive for Americans who are using natural gas, because once it's exported, it's going to be sold at the global price, not at the domestic price. It'll raise the price about four times of what it currently is.
Yeah, and I also know, Kim, we were talking earlier that very often in these issues, farmers and communities are kind of pitted against unions and construction trades. And on Labor Day or International Workers' Day, we should highlight that it seems to be a kind of a false setup of people, because we all have to drink water, we have to eat healthy food, or we should try anyway, and we have to breathe the air. So what has been your experience with that?
My experience is that the oil and gas industry will provide buses for and get a large number of unions to show up at anti-fracking demonstrations or community hearings, public community hearings. And it's an intimidation tactic. And they're actually telling the unions that, you know, that people that are concerned about their water and their home and, you know, our food supply are actually working against the unions, when in fact we're all for the unions. We want the unions to be able to have clean jobs. We want the unions to be able to feed their families and tuck their children in at night. We all want the same things. We don't appreciate, and we want to highlight the fact that the industry is sort of creating this false, you know, argument between people and jobs, when in all we're all on the same side.
All right, and I guess Claire said earlier that they have said they'd be just as happy to build a wind turbine or solar panels than
than a pipeline.
Than a pipeline, right? Okay. Did you want to add anything, Asha, to that?
Yeah. I just that's a great point about the unions, and I just think that it's really important that we work with union leaders to develop jobs. Clean jobs that they can actually feel good about giving to union members. That's, if we don't have those jobs, then our argument is lessened. So that's a really good way to go. It's very important that we're all on the same page.
Okay, yeah. Great. Now, I know the website for the community is minisinkmatters.org. That's minisink, that's the name of the community, minisinkmatters.org. And what is your website for Sane.
It's saneenergyproject.org, the opposite of insane.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, well, I want to thank my guests this morning, Asha Kanalos on the phone, Kim Frachek, and Claire Donahue, also from the Sane Energy Project. And again, it's minisyncmatters.org and saneenergyproject.org. Okay, thank you. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Welcome back to On the Ground, the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment on 89.3 WPFW. I'm Esther Avaram, your host. Well, today in Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan, the first site of the original Occupy movement, there's a May Day People's Assembly. And at this moment in Charlotte, North Carolina, activists protesting both inside and outside of the shareholders meeting of Duke Energy, the company responsible for a massive coal ash spill. Occupy activists in North Carolina say they want to help build the resurgence of the movement by setting up tents and or staying outside of Bank of America corporate headquarters today. The organizers in Charlotte told On the Ground that Bank of America continues to foreclose on people's homes, hire contractors to spy on activists, and continues to fund the coal and nuclear industry that is destroying our planet and our future. Their list of demands start with Bank of America stopping all foreclosures immediately and stopping the funding of the nuclear and coal industry. Joining me from the site of the demonstration outside Duke Energy is Tony Ndege, a longtime anti-war activist who is an organizer with Occupy in North Carolina. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining me this morning. Well, let's start with what's happening right now. I hear a lot of noise there.
I apologize for the wind and the noise. It's sort of a windy day, but fortunately it hasn't rained. We have a fantastic day of activism here in North Carolina. Here in Charlotte, we have two events that you just announced. We're just probably on the tail end of our protest. Outside of Duke Energy headquarters, we have hundreds of folks outside from all over the state, Occupy, as well as several organizations, NC Warren, Sierra Club, you name it.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about, why it's important to do these activities today on May 1st?
Well, there's some reasons. Number one, I just think it's very important for a resurgence, or actually, I think a reinvention of activism in the South. As you probably well know, most of the states in the South are right-to-work states, and today, being International Workers' Day, is very important for May Day to start becoming established as a regular event in the South. It really hasn't picked up quite like it should have by now, and this is the beginnings of I think what's going to be a pretty amazing resurgence of activism, and probably the first really powerful labor movement in close to 100 years. We have Fight for 15 folks. They're called NC Raise Up is the campaign here. It's basically fighting for a living wage for fast food workers. We have teachers that are starting to get together and advocate for each other. So we have some very important things happening. Also here today is Duke Energy, which is the subject of a federal investigation after being the center of the third largest oil spill, coal ash spill in history into the Dan River. And it's actually one of Duke Energy's smallest ponds that they have. They have over 37 coalesce ponds in this region, and this is one of the smaller ones, and it already seeps over 70 miles. So our governor, McCrory, Pat McCrory, is a 30-year alum of Duke Energy. He was an employee for 30 years. So it's one of the situations where you have corporate power and really not a whole lot of distinction, and we have to rise up against that.
Okay. You know, I know that in a sense, you know, Occupy North Carolina considers itself kind of the, you know, giving birth to the Moral Mondays movement. Can you talk about that? I think you talked about it, about creating a presence in public spaces to, you know, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think what the Occupy movement really did, I mean, there's really nothing new about some of the basic strategies of occupation, but I think the timing and really taking it right to Wall Street and right to, we call this the Wall Street of the South here in Charlotte, North Carolina, is a really important shift in strategy. The importance of physical presence at the centers of power, not just at the voting booth, is what Occupy was really sending a message about, and also sending a message about the fact that there's a lot of frustration over the fact that no matter who you vote for at the voting booth, there's still all of this, you know, trillions of dollars of corporate cash infused into international politics. So it's one of those things where we definitely influence a lot of folks. We have a lot of contact with NLACP. We came together on a few projects. And we talked about strategies when the voter ID bill, I don't know if folks know about it, but it's a sort of ALEC-based, American Legislative Exchange Council-based voter ID bill that's been passing around the nation. And North Carolina is pretty much the epicenter for ALEC right now and ALEC experiments. And so, you know, we talked about that, you know, what's it going to take? And we were like, you know what, this is going to take a lot of people arrested. And it started out with 17 ministers and a couple of students and community leaders getting arrested, and it just grew and grew until you had over 1,000 people committing civil disobedience in the center of power right at the end of North Carolina General Assembly.
Great.
So I really think, you know, there's undoubtedly an influence from the Occupy, or a stepping it up, I think,
okay.
From the Occupy.
All right. Well, thank you. I hope you don't blow away down there.
I've been
speaking with Tony Ndege, a longtime anti-war activist who's an organized with Occupy in North Carolina. He's at the site of a protest inside and outside of the shareholders meeting of Duke Energy in Charlotte, North Carolina this morning. Thank you, Tony, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on, and we're having a great day.
Okay. All right. So when we come back, we'll take your questions and comments at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. On today, May Day, May 1st, celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day. What are your thoughts, issues concerning work, workers, the labor movement, or as we have been discussing, your thoughts on the impact of corporations on the lives of working people and communities? We'll be right back. and welcome back to the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, what we're calling the On the Ground edition. I'm your host, Esther Rivera. I'm happy to be back on Community Comment with the WPFW family. Thursdays will be dedicated to social justice activism with a special emphasis on sustainable living, the environment, economics, labor, and of course, the left edge of culture and media. Today is May 1st, or May Day, celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day, a day to protest for the rights of working people. For the past half hour, we've been speaking with activists on the ground today in D.C. at a federal court hearing on behalf of working farmers. And we spoke to one of the activists who are taking two mega corporations to task for their impact on working families, Bank of America and Duke Energy. Now it's your turn. The number to call is 202-588-0893. On today, May Day or May 1st, celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day, as I said. What are your thoughts, issues concerning work, workers, the labor movement, or as we have been discussing, your thoughts on the impact of corporations on the lives of working people and communities? 202-588-0893. And I think we have some callers on the line. Caller, you're on the air.
Well, good morning, Esther. How are you this morning?
I'm fine.
And thank you for taking my call. This is Tyrone from D.C., Northwest D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the corporations, not all of them, but too many of them, a lot of them really, their impact on the workers are just simply atrocious. Not only that, all this fracking and which is really having an awful effect on the environment. So I think that what the people need to do, and I'm certainly glad to see them standing up and speaking out. I think that what we have to do, we have to change to Congress, not only at the federal level, which is here in D.C., but we need to change to congressmen. State legislatures throughout the United States, because apparently they don't get the message that we, the people, are tired of putting profit before people, and that's what they're doing, and that's what this is all about. And if, we have to send a strong message that those days are over.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, and thank you for calling.
You are.
Okay, Tyrone says we need to put people before profits. Okay, we have another caller on the line. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I want to first congratulate you on a great show, chock full of very interesting information, and I love the name of the show, On the Ground. I just wanted to pick up on something that you said about the way the corporations basically make their money off of controlling the goods and services that are really essential to people, like food and their fuel sources. And in recognition of May Day, I just wanted to point out that Marx made the comment that the battering rams of imperialism are really not military in nature, but economic. It's the ability of the international corporations to move goods and services that are for sale, that is, commodities, across international borders. And what he meant by that is that the poor and working people are forced to buy from corporations because corporations can make the essentials of life available more cheaply. So it's really important to remember this as we engage in social struggles, because there is an illusion out there that individuals can somehow create a sustainable economy in competition with these corporations. And you can create a business that can supply certain needs that are not essential, or maybe, you know, foodstuffs that are kind of luxuries. But in terms of the real goods that sustain us, housing, medical care, and so on and so forth, people are forced to go to the cheapest source possible, and that's going to be the major corporations. So we have to strike at their heart if we're going to really make social change. I just wanted to make that comment. And again, thank you for a great show.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I think we have another caller on the line.
Yes, good afternoon. Oh, it's still morning. Well, hooked up to you and the PFW listening audience. People seem to forget. They have short memories. This whole world economic situation, these people that are in control today, they didn't get there because they were so smart and honest. They got there because of slavery, theft. They got there because they were immature human beings. And they seem to be now almost like aliens on our planet because they have no sympathy or empathy from the people that they're extracting all this wealth from. Mm-hmm. So now that they got all of this wealth and power, they don't seem to need the people anymore. And they are making plans for them to survive a Holocaust that will get rid of most of the people on the planet. And so this is the same genocidal program that was hatched against indigenous people all over the planet years ago that is now extending to the very people that they, the community that they come out of, the European communities. And their people now are being put on the list for extinction. So it's not going to be a solving of a this problem. It's going to have to be a dissolving of this problem. And to dissolve this problem, we've got to return the leadership, the custodianship back to the indigenous black aboriginal people, first people on this planet, who know how to oversee people and have and can extend true leadership and rulership that will maintain the planet and put us back into the orbit in the harmony with the universe. These people will never be able to solve these problems because they are the problems. And so we can't look to them for justice. We got to look for the people that came with justice, those who invented justice. And that's the aboriginal and indigenous black people of this planet. Okay. So until sovereignty and leadership is returned to the indigenous black community, we will see continued mass destruction and poisoning and misappropriation of huge amounts of wealth on this planet.
Okay. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I think we have another caller. I think we have another caller. I'm not really sure. Are you there? Are you there, caller? Okay, well, I guess not. Well, you know, still in the studio with me is Kim Fracek and Claire Donahue from Sane Energy Project. And, you know, the callers are really pointing out some of the same things I think that you're talking about with your work, because it's not just with Minisink, actually. You know, you care about how this whole region actually is being impacted by the oil and gas industry. What are some of the details that you can tell us about Cove Point and our region?
So yeah, Cove Point is in Maryland, and this will be an LNG export terminal. What they'll do is they'll super chill the gas until it's liquefied. So there'll be tanker ships pulling up to take that liquefied gas away. This is a highly, highly explosive material. It's incredibly dangerous. An LNG facility just blew up on the West Coast a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. LNG has been banned in New York City because in the 70s, an LNG tank exploded and killed 40 people. So it's so explosive. Someone involved in the project was telling us last night that they want to build a 60-foot-high wall around this facility, which is sited, again, this is a new thing. They've never done anything like this in a residential neighborhood before. It's sited next to 300 homes, like a, you know, regular neighborhood. And so they're going to, proposing to build a 60-foot wall, because if it explodes, that would hold in the explosive vapors. You know, so right there, that tells you how dangerous this kind of project is.
Well, we'll definitely have to get some people from Cove Point when we will return to the subject many times, because they probably moved there to be next to the water and enjoy the view and, you know, be next to nature and the bay and whatever. And now a 60-foot wall, like, I don't, you know.
And a dangerous industrial site.
Exactly. Okay.
One of the points about Minisink, New York, is many of the 9/11 first responders moved because they were having so many problems breathing after working at the 9/11 site, they all moved up to Minisink to get fresh country air. And now a lot of 9/11 first responders and workers are now living in Minisink and now are being, you know, followed by this compressor station up there.
Wow. So let's go back to the lines. We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Esther.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I'm just going to comment quickly on the XL pipeline. There's a lot of pressure to build that from a lot of different areas. Even the Washington Post is pushing it. I think the decision has already been made to do it. The White House is just postponing it for political convenience. You know, the benefit from the pipeline, I mean, will help the unions. The unions want it built. You know, unfortunately, there's no balance. There's no, it's an all or nothing thing. The benefit from the pipeline will be temporary. I mean, it will create jobs. But just like coal, there's only so much coal you can extract. I mean, it'll bring jobs to the coal industry. I was in West Virginia for many years with the environmental movement. And there's going to be runoff from the coal extraction that would go down into a creek. The bottom line is the damage that the environment will suffer is permanent.
Okay.
The benefit that the unions, I mean, I'm very pro-union, but the fact is, I know pollution creates jobs, and it's an all-or-nothing thing.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that. Damage to the environment will be permanent.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for calling. We have another caller. We have a full bank here. You're on the air.
Good morning. Happy holiday.
Thank you.
Now, there's the problem with May Day is it's International Workers' Day. It's a revolutionary holiday, and we need to. Which the system will never provide, will never be stewards for the earth, and we've got to take that position out. We don't need we need revolutionary leadership, whether that's indigenous people, whether that's non-indigenous people. We need a political party, a vanguard party, which brings forth the best of all people to unite to change the world. We can't go back to tribalism. We can't go back to this farm, that farm, eking out a thing. We've got to change the entire system. And there are people out there that they'll say things like jobs, not war. Jobs, not war, really, when it falls down to it, means jobs for Americans, not war. And if a few white Americans get jobs, they'll say, look, we gave you jobs. We can cut back on the war. And there's another slogan, quote, unquote, May 1st is Workers' Power Day. No, it's not Workers' Power Day. It's International Workers' Day. It's a day when we refuse to accept slavery in any form. Workers' Power is a spinoff from the slogans like Black Power, which is a revolutionary slogan. But then the Black Panthers came along and they said, all power to the people. And even someone who is definitely not a communist, Jim Morrison, said, we want the world and we want it now. And now, stepping back and saying Workers' Power Day seems like you're apologizing. The left needs to stop apologizing and stop trying to be the support group for the AFL-CIO. The AFL-CIO is not a workers' organization anymore. It's an organization of better-off workers, and they've given up their position as leadership, and they've never had that leadership. And
okay.
When it talks about, and what is to be done about the difference between being a tribune of the people and a trade union secretary, and if I had my choice, I'd be a tribune of the people.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to go to a break, and then we'll be right back.
Dina Briscoe, president of the American Postal Workers Union, Local 140.
What does May Day mean to you?
The history of May Day is very important to me, and it's very significant for workers and the builders of this country. But I feel as though the problem is it's been watered down in America, and it's not because of the change in the venue to Labor Day. Is not honored the way it historically was. So May Day, for me, is very important. It means so much. But my problem is because it has been watered down and it's a regular work day, I have a tight schedule that day and won't be able to participate in a lot of the activities that are going on, and I think it's a disservice to the country that it no longer has a standing role or a great role in American history.
Happy May Day from the D.C. Labor Fest. This art has a hammer.
Oh, one for my bed. All right. Night and day. All night. One for my bed. All right.
And welcome back to the new Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, what we're calling the On the Ground edition. I'm your host, Esther Rivera. I'm happy to be back on Community Comment with you this morning. We're going to go back to the lines. We're talking about May Day, May 1st today, and celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day. And so let's go back to the callers. Caller, you're on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is International Workers' Day, and we should also look at the rest of the world. And as they do fracking here and pipelines, there are even worse situations in Africa, in Congo or in Ethiopia or
Nigeria.
Other parts, Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Look. Oil is being spilled all over the continent, and also dictatorships are imposed. Dictatorships that do ethnic cleansing and genocide, like in Ethiopia. Where do they get their funding to do all this? It's the bank, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. Now, when we pressure the U.S. government, the dictators go to China. They get their funding from China. And we should also look at what China does in Africa. We should also look at what other countries are doing to Africa. It has to be global. If it's wrong in Ethiopia, it has to be wrong everywhere else. If it's wrong in USA, it has to be wrong everywhere else. We have to look with the same eyes. No human life is less important than anybody else's. We should look at what's happening in Ethiopia. The capital city is expanding and they're ethnically cleansing the people around the capital city. They are ethnically cleansing people from the south. They are ethnically cleansing in the western part of the country. Who does this? It is the government, funded by Amnesty International and the Chinese government. We have to be even-handed. We should look at everywhere and okay. Not just concentrate on one part.
Okay. 202-588-0893. I want to thank Tesla for calling in this morning. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. Next caller, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the fracking that y'all was talking about a little earlier.
Yes.
And I wanted to say how admirable that is that you guys are actually trying to fight, the young lady that was on, try to stop this fracking. I think when it comes to fracking, it's a very dangerous thing. Not only is it dangerous to the environment, but I never really hear anybody talk about the fact that it can actually be used as a weapon. I mean, if you think about it, if you try to, use this fracking, let's say you put it on a fault line, wouldn't that not create like an earthquake? Mm. Wouldn't that not create like a situation?
Right.
In L.A., right on the center.
Exactly, yeah. Our guests here are agreeing with you.
Yeah, because, look, we had an earthquake in D.C. A few years ago, and I looked on Google Maps and where the earthquake, like, originated from. It was, like, Mineral, Virginia, where it's, like, a mining town.
Mm.
And, like, it just boggles my mind that people never really think about that. Like, I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me overthinking, but I just wanted to throw that in the ether. Maybe people could actually address that issue. Thank you for my call.
Oh, and thank you for calling. You know, just the idea, because we didn't really talk about the mechanics of fracking. You know, we kind of assume sometimes that people know what it is, but they're basically putting this cocktail of very highly toxic chemicals into the earth in the hope of raising out gas that's in the shale. And even to this day, I don't think that people have to, these companies have to disclose what is in this toxic mix that they're injecting into the earth. I mean, that's actually, to me, it's like almost hurtful, like, you know, injecting it into the planet, this these poisons, you know what I mean? So anyway, we're going to move on. 202-588-0893. Caller, you're on the air. Are they there? Okay. Well, you know, I think we may have lost the caller, but you know, we just been talking about these issues today and kind of mixing together the whole issues of the planet, jobs, you know, how we will kind of move forward as a species. I mean, I, you know, I know that you all took the metro here, and I almost was ashamed to say, oh, no, I'm driving. But, you know, even something simple like that, a lot of us who have to drive for work or whatever, we're like, you know, like, I don't even want to, like, get another car. I'm like, can't they, like, make a car that, aren't we ready to have a car that I can buy that's not going to be polluting, that's not going to cost, like, $500,000?
Sure.
So, you know, all these things are very, like one of the callers was saying, all the bread and butter issues about where we can live, you know, what we can eat, the water that we drink, you know, the food, did I say food, all those just basic things are really coming together around the issues of International Workers Day. I want to thank my guests this morning, Kim Fracek, Claire Donahue from Sane Energy Project, the opposite of insane. I want to thank Asha Kanolis, who joined us on the line earlier, and Tony Ndege, who joined me from Charlotte, who is at the Duke Energy shareholders meeting protesting and will be protesting later today at Bank of America. I want to thank Mike, my engineer. Go, Mike. And I want to thank you for listening and calling in. Our theme music is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. Up next is Don't Forget the Blues with Dr. Nick. At 1 p.m., Eugene DeWitt Kinlow and Deborah Simmons host the DC Politics Hour. At 2 p.m., the Empower Hour with Deshuna Spencer. So thank you very much. And peace.